Greetings from Podcastville. The church of what's happened now is brought to you by CBDLion.com. Listen, everybody's trying to fucking shove CBD down your throat. You don't even know what you're putting down there. With CBDLion.com, you know exactly what you're getting. The best. Go to CBDLion.com right now and check out their third-party lab results for yourself. They come in a vape. They come in cartridges or a shatter. But if you're not into smoking, you can eat a gummy, one of the raspberry ones, strawberry ones, or orange ones. Listen, CBD Lion is the way to go. Trust me. Go to CBDLion.com right now, whether pick the tincture, the gummies, the shatter, the vape, anything you go, press in church on the way out and get 20% off. That's what Uncle Joey's doing for you to kick off this fucking fall, okay? It's motherfucking Labor Day weekend. You're still not on CBD. You're still not taking care of yourself. Go to CBDLion.com right now. Press in church and get 20% at checkout. The church is also brought to you by my bookie. Listen, bitches, that's it. Tomorrow, football season is upon us. You like winning money? You like betting sports? All right, I'll tell you where to put your money down. Ready? Grab a pen. MyBookie.com. If you're trying to bet on the NFL, baseball, MMA, UFC, whatever the fuck you got, MyBookie's got it. They got better incentives and more lines than any other sports book, period. And this year, they're running a super contest. You ready? $100 to enter. You pick five teams a week against the spread, and you rack up the points. First place guaranteed gets you $100,000. Plus, they just revamped their site, and it's looking fucking tremendous. So go take a look if you haven't already. Now, do me a favor. This is how we're going to start football season, all right? You're going to double down on your deposit right now. We're going to double your first deposit right now. Double your first deposit today, right now. Use promo code CHURCH and get 100% bonus on your initial deposit up to $1,000. That means you put $1,000 in. What do they put in, Lee?
$1,000.
Where the fuck are you going to get that from? That's how Uncle Joey takes care of you. Who's better than you? Nobody. So go to mybookie.ag today. That's mybookie.ag. Do not forget to use the promo code CHURCH when creating your account, because then you can't claim your bonus. Listen, with mybookie.ag, you play, you win, you get paid. And check my Instagram on Thursdays. I'll be dropping a video for my bookie every week. Uncle Joey is my bookie. Follow me at Mad Flavors World. Kick this motherfucking mule, Lee. Oh, shit. We're getting this fucking party started today. Andrew Schultz. The Christ Killer. And your Uncle Joey D is talking about this. That fucking fire out, you fuck. So, did you go to Brandeis High School?
No. I went to Baruch College Campus High School.
Were you supposed to go to Brandeis? Did you have an option to go to? Because that was
But that was a West Side school.
Yeah,
that I was East Side.
Okay, you're on the East Side.
So, I grew up on, like, East, like, 97th, and, on the East Side. Like, I was born in Mount Sinai, which is up on, like, what is that, like 98th or something like that, 9800 right, or something like that, and like 5th. And then we moved over to 82nd Central Park West. And then 4th grade, we moved downtown. We moved to the East Village. So I spent, like, my formative years on Astor Place and watched that neighborhood just completely flip over.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
How many siblings?
One little brother.
That's it.
That's it.
What did your parents do growing up?
My folks had a dance studio. My mom was a ballroom dancer.
No shit.
Yeah, and my dad, like, ran the studio with my mom.
No fucking shit. Yeah. So it's been in your blood.
Yeah, like, they were just super supportive of this because they did it. And they kind of, like, my mom's from Scotland, born and raised in Scotland, came here when she was in her 20s and shit. So her whole idea on America is, like, you really could do whatever. Like, I would remember her, like, as a kid. She would tell me, like, vivid memories of my mom just going, you can do anything you want. She'd go, if you reach for the stars and you get to the moon, you got to the moon. Like, as a kid, I remember her saying that. And I think that's been my competitive advantage, is, like, I have delusional thinking Like, I really, truly believe I can do these things that are unrealistic, and then I'm only competing with people who are also unrealistic.
Where'd you go to high school?
This Baruch College campus high school. It was like inside Baruch College.
And did you go to college?
Yeah, I went to Santa Barbara out here.
Did you? Yeah. What'd you major in?
Psychology.
And when did you decide to get into comedy?
I was managing a restaurant while I went to school, and they had a comedy night.
Here in?
In Santa Barbara.
Okay.
And like a bunch of guys, like the LA guys. Like, I remember Sebastian coming up and performing in this fucking restaurant. Like, I remember a bunch of guys. Like, I remember Tig Notaro coming and performing. Like, it's crazy to see, you know, who's ended up, you know, blowing up from the people that are performing this shitty little restaurant. And then they asked me if I wanted to try it one time, and I was like, yeah, I fucking always love comedy. Like, I bought the Def Comedy Jam, like, cassettes, you know, that scam way back in the day.
Yeah,
you, like,
Def Comedy Jam.
Bro, you give your dad's credit card, and then they just keep on sending you these cassettes. So, like, we just had all these cassettes, but I was, like, obsessed, you know, and, like, you know, watching the Kings of Comedy, that kind of stuff, like, obviously Delirious, and yeah, I just thought it was so cool. And then they asked me to try it, and I was like, fuck it, I'll give it a try.
Up here in Santa Barbara.
Up here in Santa Barbara. Now, I came back like a month later, and then I just started back up in New York.
And what did it feel like when you started?
I just loved it. I loved it, like, I just loved the problem of it. Like, you couldn't control anything. It was like basketball. You know, I grew up playing ball, and, like, the rim was always going to be 10 feet, and the ball was always going to be the size of the ball. And, like, if I could get open, I can practice enough where I can hit that shot, you know, or I can practice enough where I can get by guys. But with comedy, it was like, it doesn't matter how much you practice, you don't know what the fuck the rim is going to be like that day. You don't know what the fuck the, you know, ball is going to be like that. Everything changes. So it was like this constant problem. It's like, how do I control all these different things at one time? I just fucking loved it.
You know, I have an anecdote. I always crack jokes when I go, I'm 56. I got one foot in the grave, one a banana peel. But the truth of the matter is, I got one foot in the grave, but I'm still learning something every day.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a lot of regular people listen to this, and a lot of comic people listen to this. And I tell a lot of young comedians not to be in a rush, that it's a journey.
Yeah.
And the journey is the best part, because,
dude,
you get to find the treasure that is life. Life is, yeah, a fucking treasure.
But that shit is so hard. Like, you know, it's like, you know how, like, every rich person says money doesn't make you happy, and every poor person is like, man, once I get some money, I'm going to be happy.
Right.
It's like, my mom would say the same shit to me, because she was like 3-time U.S. ballroom dance champion. Like, so in her field, she was like the best. And she would always say, the journey is the best. Like, enjoy, you know, I come home from sets and bombing and just having like a whole, she'd be like, listen, this is the best part
of your life.
This is the most exciting. And even now when I look back on it, and now I'm having all this success, like, I still remember like diner hangouts, you know what I mean? After spots, like, just me and like the guys I started with just fucking roasting each other at a diner, Veselka, 2 a.m. Like, those are the memories that, like, stick with me for some reason.
How long did you have a day? Did you keep a day job while you were doing comedy?
I did. I was probably not doing, and I lived with my parents for as long as I could, but I was probably doing a day job for the first maybe 3 years. And then I just kind of lived off scraps and then nothing. I would get, like, a little gig here or there. And then, like, the second I could, you know, maybe a college gig would pop up, and I would just kind of like live off, you know, $5 a day or $10 a day, eating falafels for, you know, 2-3 meals if I could. And then eventually some things start to happen. And then, you know, I got one thing, I got the next thing, and I could make just enough. And if I had to rent out my room in my apartment, I would do that. But it was just, how do I focus all my time on comedy? I had some savings from working. Like, my whole hustle with comedy was, I had some savings from working in college, and I was like, I'm going to spend all that money, and hopefully by the time I'm at zero, I'll make money doing comedy. So I just invested everything I had saved my whole life into learning how to do comedy.
You know, I always see these people that invest in the stock market or gamble. And I always tell people, listen, if you're going to gamble, gamble on yourself.
Yeah.
I've always gambled on me, and I've always bet on me. And to be honest with you, I've always been the underdog.
Yeah.
And I've known this when I walk into the room.
Yeah.
You know, that's what keeps me fucking bouncing.
Yeah.
You know? But you've taken the hustle in a different way.
You got to do it, man.
And there's not too many people that get the system. You know, you become an open micer, you fight, you fight, you fight, you fight, you start getting a little bit, and all of a sudden Comedy Central or somebody gets involved, mm-hmm. and then you scrap, then something good happens, and then you and then nothing happens for a while.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, my agent's going to help me, or my manager's going to help me,
yeah.
or my friend said, and at the end of the day, the only person that could help you is you.
Yeah.
You have to sit down, evaluate where you are,
yeah.
grab a notebook, and set out a plan.
That's it.
And stick to that plan.
Yeah.
And whether your mother dies, whether your dog gets hit by a yeah. car, that thing gets executed. And you do it enough, and it just becomes secondary. And next thing you know, I think that 90% of people don't stick with things because they don't see the results
yeah.
the first year.
They need it quick.
They need it quick. And
yeah.
that's what this journey taught me. I had no patience. I want that pussy now. I
yeah.
want that grandma Coke now. I want
yeah.
that pork fried rice now.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. But by the time I got into comedy, I was 32. And I had already been beat up by life. Mm-hmm. I had already been to prison, you know. So I was like, if I do this, I'm going to do this the right way. I asked 1,000 questions. I got a job.
Yeah.
As like a door guy at a club,
yeah.
I asked 1,000 questions.
Yeah.
I knew. The other day somebody wrote, you know, restock your shirts. You could make more money. And I'm like, if I wanted to make money,
yeah.
I would have got into selling cocaine.
Yeah. yeah.
When I got into this in the beginning,
yeah, yeah.
from day one, I always said, there's not going to be any money.
Yeah.
And that's what made this journey for a guy like me even better because I'm like everybody else.
Yeah.
I was waiting to get money to make me happy.
Yeah, you can't get good at money. That's the thing I realized. Like, money isn't a skill, right? So it's like, I can't get good at that. I can get good at a skill. And I've realized at least wherever there's greatness, there's money. Like, you could be the best at darts, and that motherfucker's making money. Nobody that's the best at something isn't making some money. So my feeling was like, I'm just going to do the shit I love, and money will find it.
Money will find it.
But I never... And the other thing is, like, I realized, like, if I'm... I'm kind of, like, maniacal with my work ethic, like, but I got to love it. So my feeling was like, I'll just do the shit that I love, and then I'll work my ass off on it. And I know I can outwork you, you know, even if you're better than me or you're more gifted than me or something like that. Like, it's just, I'll outwork you. But I can only do that if I really love it. So I know I love stand-up more than anything, so I don't mind, you know, grinding as hard as I put. Like, tomorrow I'm gonna take a flight at midnight to New York. I land at 9 in the morning. I'll do 2 podcasts, and then I hop on a flight to Russia. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people just won't do that. A lot of people will be like, I'm gonna be tired. So I'll just subtract tired. I'll subtract a lot of shit that's fucked up. Like, I haven't seen a lot of my friends' kids. It fucking sucks. But, like, there's certain things you got to sacrifice if you want to be great at things.
You didn't get put on this planet to be, look at kids anyway. You don't look at your own kid when you have your own
That's
kid.
For Epstein.
You know, that's the honest to God truth.
Yeah.
I've been watching you. I've been mm-hmm. watching your movements and stuff. Because I love watching.
Mm.
I love... You don't learn, but you learn by watching. Let me see what Richard Jenny's doing. Let me see what this guy's doing. Let me see what this guy's doing. Oh, this guy's putting $200,000 into a special that he really fucking thinks he's going to sell. Good luck, fucko. You know, you watch. And you just, I just figured out your whole game. Number one, you're a psych major. Number two, you're an old hoopster. And when you're an old hoopster, you always know one thing. That guy is practicing right now.
Mm.
That guy right now is in his, because with basketball, you can practice all day.
All day.
With me at night, I go home and sit on the wall and practice my defense on the wall and do burpees.
Yeah,
And I dribble everywhere all over the fucking house. And I go in the yard and do figure eights.
Yeah.
And I had a backboard and I do, what was Madden drills? What was his name? What was the rebounder that you just kept?
Rodman.
No. Before him in the 50s.
Like the Hoosiers?
Like some guy had a drill. The something drill. You go from one side of the basket to the other. And I do that for 3 fucking hours, you know?
Yeah.
When you play, and that was your mentality 100%. With basketball. If you're not doing it, that other motherfucker's doing it.
100%.
You're sleeping, that dude's doing jumping jacks.
Mm-hmm.
That dude is jumping right now, working on his vertical so he could block your shit.
Yeah.
So That was my mentality when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I'd watch a fucking bat. I still remember watching like the old Knicks, like Walt Frazier and Earl Monroe.
Yeah.
You know? And I'd watch how Walt Frazier would walk up to you and turn you, and Earl Monroe would just pick your pocket. In those days, they were allowed to put their finger,
pinky on a defender.
Finger. So they would go like this. Let's say you didn't even see it. Watch this.
Yeah.
Let's say when the Knicks were playing the Celtics, and you had to cover White Boy. What was his name from the Celtics?
Havlicek.
Havlicek, right?
Yeah,
Havlicek. I'm talking the 70s. They would go like this, but they would hold your shirt in a way. See, the ref can't see that. The
of course
camera
not.
Can't see that right now.
Yeah.
But you're not going nowhere.
Yeah.
That gives me a minute. They would do the dirtiest things to you.
Yeah.
They would put their hands in your shorts.
Yeah.
And guard. That's why it was called, what was it called? Hand guarding.
Yeah. Hand checking. Yeah.
Hand checking.
Yeah.
They wouldn't hand check you. They would they would take your shirt and wrap it under their finger.
Yeah.
So they really had one finger out and three out. It was fucking amazing to see, like, all the tricks that you could do. But anyway, see, that's the school of thought you came from. You
came from
the
sports,
fucking,
man.
If he's not doing it, I'm going to be doing it.
I used to rewrite my set every night. When I first started, I would rewrite it every night. I'd just go, oh, that didn't work. Let me change it. I didn't understand in the moment that like, you could perform it better. I thought there was something wrong with it. So I was like, I'm going to fix it. I read every single book. I used to transcribe. Dude, I was psycho. Like, I would transcribe whole specials and just try to understand what the joke was. How did he get from here to there? The premise. Like, I would just.
What were the specials you transcribed?
Chappelle, man. I was, obviously Rock. I mean, I read Rock's book. But I was really trying to understand, like, jokes. I was like, some people understand it. I was like trying to understand opening and the value of opening and like why setting a tone early can, you know, lead to something. And like, I would disagree with a lot of conventional wisdom, but I wouldn't understand why just yet. You know, like everybody always say like open up agreeable and all that kind of shit. And like, I always felt in my heart that if I opened up like nice or sweet and then I gave them who I was, who's, you know, kind of challenges conventional thinking, like I always felt like I was lying to them. And they would resent that. So, like, I learned later on that it's like, I should open up as hard as I possibly can.
Absolutely.
Because if I can get them to laugh at that,
absolutely.
Everything else is fair game.
That's it.
You know, but it takes a lot of fucking bombing and people throwing candles at you and shit to, like, get there, you know? So it was like, I mean, I had the coolest, we had this little room in New York, the Village Lantern. And I swear to God, the only way I could have developed my style is with a place like this. They just gave us the room and we would beg people off the street to come downstairs. But it was a place where I didn't have to worry about getting booked next week. You know what I'm saying? Like I was one of the people begging strangers to come in. So as long as I got strangers in, I could perform. And then I could actually fucking be me. I wasn't like doing the cookie cutter set so I get some more feature work at the Funny Bone. I was bombing, but it was okay. I was bombing as me. I was trying to figure out what the fuck my version of stand-up was, and I don't know how I could possibly do that. I don't know how I could develop the tools that I have now if I wasn't in that type of
environment. How many years did it take you to get onto something?
It was like, for me, it was like flashes. You ever like experience that? Like I go through these things where it's like, and I knew I was about to reach something else when I would start to bomb a lot. Like I think it was maybe Nate Bargatze told me this or something. Like, I'd be doing fine, or for whatever I thought was fine at the time. And then I'd start to do shitty, and I'd be like upset and like depressed about it. And I remember my buddy, I think it was Nate, he was telling, oh, you're just plateauing. And when you're plateauing and you start to bomb again, it means you're about to have another leap. So every time I'll get into like a bomb streak, I'd be like, okay, it's coming. I don't know when it's going to come. But there's something about those bombs that like bring the you out of you.
The you out of you.
Because there's nothing left.
You get sick of it.
There's nothing left inside.
You get sick of it. And then you go, why am I doing these cookie cutter jokes?
Dude.
Which I'm not doing me. In the beginning, you're not doing you.
And if I'm going to bomb, I'm going to do it as me, bro. If I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down swinging. I'm not going to let you beat me up. Right? So, and then something in the going down swinging always brings out the raw you. And there's something about a group of strangers when they see authenticity, it's you. It's why you're electric. I was talking to Joe about this. It's like, they know it's real. They know it's real. They can't help but see something real. And if it's real, they go along with it. They'll laugh at cute shit from someone who's fake if it's like clever, that kind of shit. But the real laughs are when they're in front of something that's authentic. They just can't deny it.
It took me fucking years.
Yeah.
Like, I started out as Lenny Clark. I wore a suit.
Yeah.
That didn't work.
Because it wasn't you. They're not going to laugh if it's not you.
No, I would curse and the suit wouldn't fit. And then it was just, it took me like 4 years. And it took me, I dated a stripper.
She brought it out of you?
She was a filthy animal.
She brought it out of you.
And she would make me spend my, we could do a gig, get like $400.
Yeah.
She'd take me to the $400 and she'd dump me. Then we'd get into a fight, and I'd get thrown out into the street with $18 after I just bought groceries at a house. I'm like, and I would take, like, the prime beef with me, like, walk down the street. Like, I'd take the
Leave
sodas
the clothes, you're bringing
yeah,
the food.
I would take the food, just give it to a homeless person. Just, the last time we
You're not
fought,
gonna have this, bitch.
The last time her and I fought was in L.A., and she was spraying me with mace, and I was throwing, like, a prime rib at her.
Yeah.
We fought on the street next to Vista, in between Santa Monica Boulevard and Sunset, 1990.
She hit you with mace? I didn't know she hit you with mace.
She was shooting me with mace, and I was blocking it with the meat and swinging at her with the fucking meat. We're swinging at each other. And after that, we're like, listen, man, once you shoot mace at your boyfriend and he hits you with mace, it's time to really break up.
Yeah.
And we broke up, and today we're great friends.
So I have a theory, and not this is not all strippers, but like, I think that strippers experience so much bullshit, like so many like fake interactions with guys trying to get over them, guys trying to schmooze them, this like pseudo like bravado part of a man because he's paying, he thinks he has some kind of like entitlement, that I think they see through bullshit better than most human beings. And I think that like, in a weird way, if you have like a friend of yours that's a stripper, you can't really be fake around her because she notices it. So maybe there's something to her like exposing your authenticity.
No. We would get into fights. And this one particular Monday, I went from fighting with her straight to the open mic in Seattle. And I went out on stage and just did 6 minutes on her. And somebody happened to catch it on tape. And then I'm going home playing and going,
that's it.
That's the guy.
That's it.
That's who it needs to be, yelling, screaming, fucking, I was angry. Mm-hmm. The jokes were funny because of the energy. The energy was right on. And you're right. After that, I got bits and smatterings of it. It would you come and go out of it.
And then you try to replicate it. And,
it's no,
fake.
It doesn't
like,
work. It doesn't work at all when you try
to be angry. It has to be real. You have to be passionate about it.
When did you start all the multi-marketing stuff? I mean,
when I had no other option. You know, I had no other, there was no other way. Like no stand-up networks or anything ever wanted to fuck with me. They just all decided early on that it wasn't going to happen for me. So I filmed my own special and I was hoping I'd be able to sell it. And everybody said no. And I was like, well, I got to find another way. And that's when I started really analyzing what was wrong with stand-up.
What did you pay for the first special, if you don't mind?
20, 30 grand maybe, something like that. Edit, shot, everything. I mean, that was a really elaborate one. And I did it with Manhattan Productions. They were, you know, buddies of mine, and they did it for like the cheap. It should have cost way more. But like, we had I did it in 5 different clubs. So we had 2 different camera teams that were jumping from club to club. Because the idea was, what would it be like to have a night of comedy in New York and just following a New York comic around to these different spots? But yeah, I filmed that. Nobody wanted to buy it, so I just sat there for a second. Lowest time in my comedy career, for sure.
You know, you and me are family. I wouldn't have bought that shit either. We're family. 5 comics. You're driving me crazy. Too many fucking...
Respect.
You know.
Respect. But I was like, bro, I got to figure this fucking shit out. So I just started, you know, seeing what was wrong with the game and how I could penetrate the game. And what I kind of figured just from asking people... Everybody I asked about comedy, I would ask non-comics. I'd be like, so tell me, who you watching? Like, how are the specials? And they'd name people, and they'd always say the same thing. They'd go, it was funny. I mean, I didn't finish it. Everybody said I didn't finish it. And I was like, okay, it's too long. It's too long.
That's okay.
It's too long.
Number one, let's talk on the topic of specials.
Yeah.
I think that what's going on with specials today is a fucking horror show.
Yeah.
And when people come to me and they say that they spent between $150 and $2,000 of their hard-earned dollars on a special, I feel like fucking shooting myself.
It doesn't make any sense.
I've been here for 20 years. Nobody, listen to me.
Bro.
Nobody sells anything. You could shoot your pilot. You could shoot your movie. It's cute. There's hope.
Yeah.
But you're not going to. Because, listen, I've known at least.
If they want to buy it, they would have.
They would have. If they're going to buy it, they would have bought it before you shot it.
Simple as that.
If you got a show that you shoot in reality, and it's better than Seinfeld, and you shoot it, they're not going to buy it because they didn't shoot it.
They don't buy it based on how good you are. That's the thing that these people don't understand.
They don't understand.
It has nothing to do with how good you are.
Nothing to do with that
shit. I've been the same good as I was before I was doing well, and as I am now. I mean, obviously, I've gotten better at stand-up because you progress in this art form, but like, I was good back then. I was worthy of having a special. Nobody gave a fuck. You know, now, wherever I go, there's, you know, agents from different agencies popping up to the clubs, and everybody wants to have a conversation, that
and
kind of stuff.
And now you tell them, go suck my dick.
No, no, because you got to let people convert. That's what I realized.
Like, no, I understand that, but now you see the change. Listen,
and I don't blame them.
There's a big change.
Yeah.
You could be the funniest guy in the world.
It's a game.
But if you're not selling the ticket,
it's a game.
They're not going to talk
to you. Boom. It's simple as that.
And I didn't know that either. When I got here in 98, I'm like, oh, I'm killing up at the store.
Because we think it's about killing.
What the fuck is going on?
It ain't about killing.
It's not about killing.
That killing shit is for you and me.
It's not about killing.
It's not for them.
That's a personal thing that you want to do on your own.
That's it.
I want to go give them everything the fuck I got.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people I see on TV. I was watching some Disney Channel with my daughter. And I had to go to the ice house that night, and it was some fucking challenge of the network kids or something.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the hosts was an ex-comic that I knew from years ago, and I watched that show, and I felt so bad for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's like, isn't that great? Yeah. That's what I want to do, be a Universal with some fucking mook next to me, being an announcer at the Special Olympics for kids. I'd rather be at the Funny Bone in Columbus fucking slinging dick up on stage, rocking it, you know what I'm saying?
100%.
But it's so weird how I was not a, I was never a an industry favorite.
Yeah.
When I did my CISO special, I was a little happy, but not really.
Yeah.
When I did the Netflix special, till this day, I'm disappointed.
Why?
Because I wanted to be you.
Okay.
I did not want to cross that line. If you didn't want me, like right now, I could go to Netflix tomorrow and say, hey, I'm going to do a special in Cuban.
Yeah,
and they'll give me a special.
Right.
They'll give me an hour taping in Miami. I could do that, but I won't.
Why not?
Why would I? I got to play to your fucking boat?
No.
Come see me in the fucking main room on a Tuesday night and tell me I don't deserve an hour special. So I don't argue on that. In my world, I don't give a fuck about that. But you're a special guy, Andrew.
Mm.
Right now, you're a very special guy. And you're special for comedy.
Mm.
Because you're letting people know what I tried to let people know years ago. That you don't need anybody
you don't.
In comedy.
Okay. You do not.
You don't need a network, and especially in today's climate with YouTube and social media and whatever. I'm not saying that you're going to be, listen, if you want to do comedy for a year and put your videos up and get them to book you as a headliner, and then fucking Steve Simone goes in there in front of you and levels the stage in front of you, and you don't get ever booked again, and then you can't go nowhere. Go ahead, put your, but I'm saying when people start to tell you you're really making a difference, and you go on a time schedule.
Mm.
Every day, every second Monday, I'm going to put 15 minutes up.
Mm-hmm.
That means if you're going to put 15 minutes
you
up.
You got to fucking be
every
ready.
Every new Monday, every one Monday a month, you got to work. That's, that takes work.
That's,
15 minutes takes work. If you commit to yourself to put a 15-minute special up every 3 months, that's an hour a year.
Bro, it's a lot.
After eight of them, people are going to start paying attention to you.
I cannot stress more what you just said. I think the illusion is that if you just put some clips up, that it works. I mean, to put shit in perspective, like in the last 7 months, I've released 4 hours worth of stand-up.
I watched crowd work, and it was great.
Thank you, man.
I
appreciate
it. It was great the way you shot it. Now, what does something like that cost you to shoot?
I mean, that's nothing. That's like I have my video guy, Alex Media. Shout out to Alex Media. And you know, he's my full-time video guy. And I got another comic that's on the road with me, Mark Gagnon, that also does video and editing stuff. And we basically have this team as the three of us, and we brought five cameras down there, and we're just like, yo, let's just shoot it and see what the fuck we get. And that's how I think comedy should be done. Like, I don't think you should put all this pressure to like doing this thing at one time, getting that one thing right.
I don't want that either.
Fuck that. Like, film a bunch and use what's fucking good. You know, it's like I want my most natural moment. Like, for you, if I'm capturing a special with you, I don't even want you to know I'm filming. Like, the way I would shoot
you. I don't want
you
to know.
I know. I'd hide the cameras for a whole fucking weekend.
I don't want you to know.
And then I'd go to you at the end of the week, and I'd be like, yo, Joey, by the way, remember that set that you did in the main room? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you fucking demolished. So we got that all on video. You want us to release that as your special? And you watch it, and you're like, holy shit, this is raw. True. This is natural. It's not you looking at the camera to make sure. I never tell the audience that I'm filming, because I don't want to put that in their fucking head. I want a real organic moment between comic and audience. You know, and I think that's a lot of times the difference between the clips. You know, like, that we put out and that kind of stuff. Like, I'm not putting out only jokes. I put out some crowd work stuff. Obviously, I put out the crowd work special. But, like, I'm just kind of trying to capture these raw, organic moments that we have. And we put out a fucking lot of it. But that's what I need to do to compete with a billion-dollar company. I'm basically out here just going, like, yo, we should be able to have a lane for us. So, if you're a comic and you want to put the work in, please do whatever I did. It's a blueprint for you. If there's one thing that comedy's been great for me. There's one thing I can give back to comedy. Hopefully it's a little bit of freedom for comics to, you know, who might not have had an opportunity to make one for themselves.
But what comics don't understand, what people don't understand in life is, whether you're a realtor, a comedian, is you make your own path.
100%.
You want to believe, like, I love these guys that go, hey, I'm starting a new podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting with blah, blah, blah. And they're going to fucking push it for me.
Nobody's going to push your shit.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I can just see another doomsday coming. This is another doomer who believed that somebody's going to push him. You believe that this network, who can't even push their own TV shows, are going to learn how to push a fucking podcast. And then when nothing happens, they're like, I don't know what happened, because where the fuck were you? You know?
Dude.
I've been doing the same thing for the last 10 years. I get up at 6. And I hit social media early. Did I invent that? No. A guy by the name of Howard Stern invented it. I just copied it.
There you go.
And that's all we're doing, is watching what works
Watch
for
what
certain
works.
People
yeah.
and putting it together.
Yeah.
I don't have, millions. So all these guys, they shoot that $200,000, $300,000 special. If you get to a place to shoot a special and they got a camera, boom, I don't want to do it. You just took the organicness out of the fucking room.
Dude, think about this. Have you ever seen a nice, beautiful shot in a special and that shot made you laugh?
No.
What the fuck is the point of the special? What have you ever... You sit at a comedy club, right? Not every seat is good. There's a fucking beam blocking half of the stage. Who gives a fuck? This idea that a comedy special got to look like the VMAs, it don't.
Thank God.
It has to look like a comedy club.
Thank God.
You got to feel like you're in the fucking club. It's got to sound like it. Like, people try to make the audio of the mic sound so good. And it's like, the audio should sound good. You should hear what the person's saying. But you also got to feel the crowd. All these specials out there sound like the comic's bombing. It's like, the crowd plays part of it. Make the person at home feel like they're in that fucking crowd.
Like, you know why I love the concept of the podcast so much?
Why is that?
Because I wanted to make people start listening again.
Yeah.
I think we forgot how to listen. I see it in humans.
Yeah.
We don't listen every day. You could tell somebody something 10 times.
Yeah.
And they'll come back to you. Well, whatever. You know, what the fuck we just saying
here? Yeah.
We don't listen.
Yeah.
We don't pay attention. That's why I love the podcast, because it's unedited and raw.
Yeah.
I could say the one. Lee knows. You come on this fucking podcast and you say something, you call me an hour later and say to take it out, I'll tell you what you want to hear.
It ain't happening.
But it ain't happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It ain't happening. This is what a podcast is. We're not radio.
Yeah.
I'm not answering. I don't want to do nothing.
Yeah.
It's us having a fucking conversation.
Yeah.
When I grew up where you put in was it something I said, or is the niggas crazy? The album would be a little warped,
and
you would listen to it, and Richard Pryor's jokes would be a little off. You still left, and you still had a good time. And then, in 1970-something, Richard Pryor put out a special with a fucking chalkboard behind them with a menu that had the dailies, a hamburger, 10 cents, a french fry. And I thought it was the most brilliant thing I'd ever saw in stand-up. One of the first tapes I got into it, I evolved into, after I started stand-up and started watching it, was that Richard Pryor special.
Yeah.
And what gravitated me to it was the fact that he was in front of a menu.
Yeah.
They didn't have a fucking curtain or a brick wall or shiny lights.
Yeah.
He just showed up to a place and they just taped him.
Yeah.
And it became a fucking special.
Yeah.
You know, when these agents and managers say, well, I've had 20 managers tell me, well, look at Felipe's special. It wasn't shot right. What are you talking about? It ended up in HBO. Shut the fuck up. Well, look at that special. It wasn't shot right. It ended up on this fucking thing.
Just have a good idea.
Shut the fuck up. And if Netflix don't want you, listen, who gives a fuck?
You're going to be all right.
You're going to be all right. If fucking, what's the other one that's doing it now?
Amazon.
Amazon don't want you.
Yeah.
You're going to be all right.
Yeah.
If Comedy Central don't want you, you're going to be all right. Why? Because you got a notebook, you got a stage, you got a camera, and you got YouTube.
Yeah. You got YouTube, you got Instagram, you got Twitter. I mean, if we're comics, we should be trying to make money on the road. That's the way I look at it. Like, I've never made money from a special, so now I have the most leverage going into any negotiation because you can't take anything away from me, right? It's not like I'm one of these guys that I need to put a special out every year because my mortgage is paid by the special. It's not. My mortgage is paid by the road. So when I go into negotiation, someone's like, well, we'll give you $25,000 for you to do this on Netflix. I'll be like, well, I think I'm worth more than that, and this is the number I think I'm worth, and then that's nothing is going to be lower than that because I'm fine without it.
Did you get approached with the DeGeneres?
Yeah.
What did they ask you?
Yeah.
And you turned them down?
Yeah.
Good.
But not that I was against it, because my theory is I don't have anything against Netflix. Like, I post my stuff on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube. Like, I'm not against posting on Netflix either. My whole theory with it was, if I do it, people will go see it on Netflix, and then they'll look for more of my shit on Netflix, and there won't be any more. And then they're going to go, okay, well, where else can we see them? And they'll YouTube me, and then I just converted all those people to my YouTube subscribers, and that's way more power for me. So I wasn't against it, but I got another offer that came in that was significantly higher. So I was like, okay, that's closer to what I'd be interested in.
I watched the crowd work special. I came to LA as a post-production person, and it's everything had to match, and even if you're shooting two different shows, you don't want people to know.
Sure.
And the thing I found interesting about your special is that there are a few moments where you can tell that it just, you went from one place to another.
Yeah.
And what you guys were talking about is in your head when you're editing, you're like, oh, they're gonna freak them out, and 2 seconds later you're into the next joke.
They don't care. They want to be entertained. They're not. Yeah. They didn't come to LA for post production.
Right.
You did. You're an artist, so that's your art. So you're looking at every brush stroke. You're like, ah, man, that, you know, Van Gogh didn't want to do that shit. But the average person listening is having a fucking tough day. They just came back from working a fucking shitty job, and they want 35 minutes of distraction from an annoying fucking day. And if you can provide that, there's no way in hell they're going to go, I would have adjusted the light a little bit in that, you know, second bit.
Right.
They don't care. They really don't care. If the idea is there, it speaks to it. Like, I think most people were into watching it because they're like, well, he's just going to do 35 minutes on stage and not bring any jokes. He's just going to, like, riff and fuck with the crowd for 35 minutes. Okay, I'll fuck with that. I think they were just curious in the idea. And that's what I always try to, with every special I put out, there's an agenda. And with this one, it was like, everybody keeps saying that, you know, we're so sensitive and we can't laugh at anything. And I'm like, that's bullshit.
That's all bullshit.
It is nonsense. Dude, the whole special is shot so you can see the audience and you see, obviously, me. And my crowd is probably the most diverse crowd in comedy. And you're the Mexican chick, the Indian chick, the black chicks, the black dudes, the fuck, like, every religion is just getting fucking roasted and they're laughing at themselves. And you cannot be triggered by the special because you're not going to be offended on behalf of this dude who wasn't offended about the joke about him. So my whole feeling was, instead of telling people not to be offended, I'm just going to show you. This is America right here. Nobody's offended.
In the first 5 minutes, you're goofing on the Korean guy.
And the, boom.
So, listen. You and me are from a certain place. And obviously your parents are immigrants and you see that.
My mom, yeah.
I'm never going to fucking change who the fuck I am. Mm-hmm. You understand me? I'm never going to change who the fuck I am. Last week I was telling people about my little personal things. I just stopped talking to you. Like, if you eat margarine, we're not going to talk no more. If you dip your fucking buffalo wings in ranch, we can't talk no more. You know, there's a lot of things that we just don't need to talk.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're off the fucking marker, you know. You're doing so many things that I believed in so long. If you build it, they will come.
Facts.
You know, if you have 22 videos, like I said, you keep continuing. And I see what you're doing on social media, brother. I watch what you're doing on social media. Now you're luring them in and whatever.
Try.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
A punk would have came and said, well, why didn't you pantry on it? Because you're like, for the $5.
Yeah.
What,
I got a
difference.
Yeah.
You're making it.
Short money.
It's short money.
It's like, we have it's a Patreon for the podcast.
Right.
But like for the clips and that kind of stuff, again, the long game is bigger. It's like affect comedy. Like when I see, I'll be honest, when I see, you know, Chappelle's special Sticks and Stones, right? And like the topic material he's going after and like what he's doing, like, part of me is really proud because I know we've been railing on that on YouTube for like, you know, a few years now. And it's like, oh shit, we were right. Like, we were right. 2 years ago when we decided, fuck this, or 3 years ago, whatever, fuck this PC nonsense. The people want real comedy. Let's go out there and do it. And then when you see the biggest comedian in the game, you know, and he goes and echoes a lot of these same things, it's like, yeah, that's right. We knew what we were doing. We're not fucking around.
This was, when I saw Chappelle was coming out with a new special, I was like, how good could it be? You know, like, how good could it be? Could it be better than the one that he put two out? It was one I really enjoyed.
Yeah. The belly room one.
The belly room one. But this one, he hit it out of the park as a comic. You're watching this and you're hearing these things. Listen, I'm not... I decided 15 years ago in comedy, you know how many fucking comics I saw leave this town because they're like, well, when I write material, so the networks could see the show.
You already lost.
You just lost. I do grandma jokes because I want to paint the picture so when the networks come to see me, you're done. I knew that. 15 fucking years ago. I've been here 22 years. I knew that.
Yeah.
16 years ago, I said, it's over.
You want to know a story?
Go ahead.
First time I went to Montreal, that was my thinking. I did Montreal just for laughs. And I did the new faces. And I had some jokes that I thought were like really funny and
brilliant. And oh my God.
I thought a couple were good. And then
fucking John Mulaney better fucking take his suit off. I'm coming.
And then I switched it. Because I was like, oh, this would probably make a better show or whatever I thought that you're supposed to have as a comic. I don't even want a sitcom. But like I thought since I was a comic that you're supposed to want that.
I switched
it and I didn't do well. And I fucking bombed half the set the first time. And like I just did not have a good new faces. And I didn't go back for years. And eventually I started selling tickets and they brought me back. And then this last year I went back and I did Nasty Show and I was really doing well and they asked me to do this Jeselnik Gala and I had given them a set that I was going to do for the Jeselnik Gala and the day before the gala I said, fuck that, I'm not going to do that set.
No.
And I just went up and I did whatever I felt in that moment. I didn't even have a set list. I was just like, whatever jokes feel that they're the right thing to do and I got a standing ovation, bro. And it was just this moment where it was like, trust your fucking gut. Stop trying to please these suits. Stop trying to please these execs. You do what you want to do, and you fail until it works. And I promise you, if you can keep doing it long enough, it will work out. Most people can't suffer that long, but if you can, it will work out.
I don't know what I'm going to say till I get there. Yeah. And even then.
And that's why they like it.
Even then, you got a problem.
But, dude, that's why, like, with your special, like, I don't want to see you walking on stage. If I'm watching your special, I gotta come in to you already going. Does that make sense? Like, for me, I'm the guest at your house. Not that moment where the comic walks and through the curtains and that. No, you're already moving. I should hear your voice already going. And you're talking about this. And she got a monkey and this, that, that. And then, like, the camera comes through the doors and you're there. Is it, you know what I'm saying? Because that's your comfort zone. Your comfort zone is us in your house. It's your show. You know what I mean? Not like, okay, time to turn it on.
Yeah, no, it's what they preach and what you do. After I shot the Netflix Degenerates, when it all came to me.
Yeah.
And here I'm doing comedy 26 years.
Yeah.
And it all came to me. I'm like, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm doing something. I'm going out with a different type of bag.
Let's do something, man.
What are they going to do? What are they going to do? Get me fired?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Fucking. Now, another thing that you're doing that's very intelligent is, let's be honest, I got a wife. I'm over 50. I got to pee.
Mm-hmm.
When I sit down, I'm over 50. I got to pee. When I sit down to watch a special, like, I become a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You got about 6 minutes.
That's it.
Okay. And if you pass that 6 minutes, the honest opinion, if this is Jesus and you're killing, I'm still probably going to shut you off at 28. Go do something.
Completely reasonable.
Because I sit there and catch myself going, there's something I got to be doing.
Of course.
Instead of sitting here like a Mook LaRoy.
Yeah, you're an adult.
And then you do something, and then you come back, and you finished it. I have to be honest with you. The Chappelle special, I tolerated for 38 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I went and did something. Then a night later, I came back and watched it, and then I watched it over 2 nights back to back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it sunk in, what he had done. Mm-hmm. But something you were going to start saying earlier. You did your special at 35 minutes, and you noticed that when you watch a special, as you being you,
yep.
Even if you know Chappelle or mm-hmm. Bill Burr or
yep.
Theo Vaughn,
yep.
At 28, you're like, I gotta go do something.
Dude, I had to earn 35. I didn't deserve 35 minutes of your attention. Imagine a stranger walked up to you and he was like, hey, you wanna listen to me for 35 minutes? You tell him to go fuck himself.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it took me years to earn 35 minutes of your attention. I started at 15 and then I just put up clips. The clips were anywhere from like 2 minutes to maybe 9 minutes. And I would do that every week. And then I put another special out, but those clips were around 7-8 minutes each, but you could watch them together. And then even then you'd cap at around 32 minutes. But I slowly built up your tolerance for me because who the fuck was I? I was a nobody. Nobody knew who I was. So I needed to slowly build you up to who I was. And then once you really trusted me and you love my stand-up, you love my perspective, and I give you 35 minutes, you're happy. You're like, oh, shit, it's not just 10? We get 35? It's a treat, not a chore. And I always want our art to be a treat, not a chore. I never want you to feel forced with comedy. I never want you to feel like you're bullied into it. You know, you must stay to the end. We got to do nothing, bro. It's an honor to stay to the end. That's what it should be.
That's why I never really sold shirts after a show.
You're out.
I always felt that I already tortured you enough. Come over, shake my hand, or don't shake my hand.
Yeah, but they want the shirt, man.
But they want the shirt.
They fucking love you. They want that.
Go online and buy the fucking shirt. I don't want to. I want you to come talk to me like a man. If I have, like, I don't like adding a second show some nights because the club will say, you sold out.
Yeah.
You can't go out there. They have nowhere to go, you know?
Yeah.
That bothers me.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk to them. I want to see what's on their mind. I want them to come and tell me, yeah, I got off Oxycontins because of you.
Yeah.
I started fucking my girlfriend in the ass more because of you.
Yeah.
You know, I want them to tell me what's going on with their lives, you know? But I always felt. You have no idea. I watched, you know, I'm a fan of comedy. Like,
yeah.
I can tell, you know who Gene Perret is? Gene Perret. He's a writer. He had workbooks on how to write comedy and shit, you know. I did everything. I'm a I was a student of the game.
Yeah.
This just didn't fucking happen.
Yeah.
I just didn't go on YouTube and crack a joke and people come to my shows.
Yeah.
I wanted to, I had nothing else. I had no parents, no fucking money, no relationship.
Yeah.
You know, so I had nowhere else to go. Yeah. I was like Richard Gere, Officer and the Gentleman.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
So I had to dive into this, you know. But I've had beliefs over the years with specials and, you know, social media. You're one of the few people that I'm really enjoying your journey because you're proving my perspective to myself.
Because I knew it.
I knew it. First off, we have, listen, if you came to L.A. in 1998, you had an audience. You know what your audience was a day? 3 hours.
Yeah.
8 to 11. That's your audience. You're not a daytime host, are you? No. So unless you showed up on fucking NYPD Blue or whatever, you have 3 hours a day for them to catch you from 8 to 11. Now, I got Andrew Schultz 24/7. If I wake up at 4 in the morning and I have insomnia, I can put on Schultz's podcast, one of his 35-minute specials.
Yeah.
It don't cost me nothing, whatever the fuck. It's there. That's the brilliant thing. That, you know what? I got to be honest with you. It's pretty tough while you're at work to click onto Netflix, click onto the app.
Pain in the ass.
Put on a different page and listen to somebody. It's Netflix. It's a visual. But you know what? Even with YouTube, I believe now that your audience is from 6 in the morning to fucking 11 at night.
Later.
They could watch. Yeah. So
later.
You ever put a clip up at 11 o'clock at night and you wake up and there's 90,000 comments? That's all from England and fucking Romania and fucking Australia,
yep.
New Zealand. You're like, who the fuck is watching videos at this time of the fucking night? So it's become, you're 24/7. You're accessible 24/7.
And shareable.
And shareable.
That's the big thing.
But the highlight is 8 to 5.
Yeah.
8 to 5 is a huge window compared to 8 to 11 at night. So people go into work, they get their work, they click onto YouTube, they put on Andrew, and they go on their page, and they giggle while they watch Andrew. And that to me, I knew the same thing. All I needed to do was tell my story.
Yeah.
I was just waiting to tell my story. I knew eventually there was going to be something, some break in the system that I could tell my story, and that's what separated me from the rest of these motherfuckers, you know?
But you needed a place that was uncensored, because some of our stories are better uncensored.
Yeah, no. When there's no censoring in my world.
So it's like you and I, we needed a YouTube to exist for us, you know? Like, there are a bunch of us that needed that freedom so that you could get the authentic version of us. And that's why we tend to thrive in this open free market, whereas like cornballs tend to thrive in the closed market. You know, when there was only Comedy Central, HBO doing stand up, it was like, well, you better be in one of those lanes because if not, you don't do stand up. Simple as that. And there are a lot of people that just did not fit in either of those lanes. And, you know, thank God that we got this new, like, now you got no excuse, man. Now it's like, you know, in high school, you got to, like, kind of fit into some group or you're by yourself. And then you go to college and it's like, oh, shit, I can choose my friends. That's the internet. The internet is, you do your fucking comedy, people will find you. You like talking about rats and shit or knives or potions? Motherfuckers that like rats, knives, and potions are going to find your comedy and be like, yo, that's the guy. That's who I fuck with, the rat potion dude. I love that guy. I just believe that, man, 100%.
But it's funny because years ago, if you had YouTube, people had to scroll by you. They had to look for you.
Yeah.
You know, they had to bump into you. Now you could lead them there.
Yeah.
Social media, little by little.
And I'm super lucky too because like I did a podcast with Charlamagne Tha God and I still do one, Brilliant Idiots, where like he's one of the most, you know, famous people on the planet. So I got a lot of eyeballs through him. And then of course going on Rogan's podcast and The Fighter and the Kid and like seeing those massive audiences, obviously yours now is like new people can see me because other people have supported me. Like I'm not saying this is just me. Like I'm built on a foundation of like a million comedians before me and friends of mine that happen to have immense power and influence. But like what I realized is if you're true to the game, people who are true to the game will help you. Everybody who's true to the game gets a shot. You know, like if you're a real one, other real ones notice and they go, this guy's good. We need to get behind this guy. I never asked to be on anybody's podcast, right? It was people who I just put out the work, and I trusted that if I cared about the fucking work and I cared about comedy, it would be evident enough that the people with power will go, yo, man, come on a podcast. I think people need to hear what you, what's going on with you. And I guess maybe that's, I don't know, at least that's what it seemed like for me. It's just, it's like by focusing on the game, other, you know, everything just kind of comes together.
You know, I think I follow you on Twitter. And before you were on Rogan, I had watched a couple of your clips.
Yeah.
And I had seen the amount of views you were getting. And I'm like, this kid's on to something. And then you popped up on Rogan. I knew your name was Schultz. And then when I went back to shoot the Soprano movie, you reached out. You were a gentleman. You were like, you know, you're in my city. Can I take you out to lunch? And now I started watching you a little more. And then last week, I read the Interrobang article. I love that guy. I love him, by the way. He's a good, great guy. I want to send a shout out to Interrobang. They do great work.
Yeah. They care about comedy, man.
And he, you know, listen, 20 years ago, you came here, Comedy Central didn't like you. You had to go to therapy. You had to go to therapy because...
Better grow a beard.
You had nothing. Mm-hmm. You had no option. You know, and yeah, you could shoot your special. Now, it's like you said, there's really no excuses.
You go out there, man. As whatever. Just fucking
even
do
if
it,
you want to be a drummer, whatever. But you have to stick with it. See, that's the problem.
Yeah.
People do something for 9 months. Oh, it didn't work out. Who gives a fuck? Stick with it. Do it for 18 months. Do it for, well, man, now I'm getting 50 hits. I'm like, okay, then do it for another 9 months. Man, you were right. I'm getting 90.
Yo, it's crazy because people want to go from zero to a million.
Yeah.
And it's like.
Or they want to go viral. They so drive bad. Me crazy. Like, listen, this video will go viral. Unless you got a dog who lights his asshole on fire, you got a chance of going viral like chlamydia. That's the only chance you got of going viral. You're doing a joke about a fucking dog getting killed or something like that. You know, it's also your expectations. Listen, your expectations in this game. Like I said, I've been in L.A. 22 years. I've seen stars come and go. Guys that walked into the store surrounded by three Jews and an assistant carrying his purse.
Yeah.
And they were going to be stars. And they walked into the store.
Shoots you up, spits you out.
Followed Dice by mistake. And their ego fell apart and you never saw them again. And then you see him 8 years later with a kid, ugly wife and family. And now he sells real estate in Canoga Park, you know, but he was going to be a star.
Yeah.
You even went to fucking Mel's with him a couple of nights and he told you how, man, when I saw that Hollywood sign, I knew it was calling my name. I mean, people really don't know. They come out here with these expectations. And this happens in every field. It happens in law. It happens with being a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
With your expectations of something, of what truly it means to be that.
That expectations are the killer.
Expectations.
They are the fucking killer, man. Just enjoy the work. That's what I try to do. Whenever whenever I'm depressed, it's because I care too much about the outcome instead of the work. Right, like whenever I'm looking at my phone, looking to see how many views something got or whatever, like the views validate if it was good or not, you know, like that's when I'm my most depressed or most sad or most just unhappy. When I'm at my happiest is when I've created great work and I don't give a fuck about what happens after I put it out. All I can control is the work. Once I push, you know, send or upload or whatever that button is, that's out of my control. So if you love it, cool, man. If you don't love it, that's cool, too. Nobody's going to love everything.
You're a very happy-go-lucky guy. You're at it. How long have you been doing comedy?
I think about 12 years now, 13 well, years, maybe coming long, up on 13.
How long did it take to start clicking?
I mean, man, I don't even know, dude.
How long till you went to Montreal the first time?
That was, I don't know, maybe 5-7 years ago, something like that.
And you think that you didn't do well?
I wasn't ready for it.
And then, okay. And then you really tightened up your game. And
yeah. I just didn't have a thing. I wasn't who I was yet. Like, I had little chops and shit. I could get it done, but I wasn't who I was yet. Like, you know, when you're not ready if you get rattled by no reaction to your bit because you're faking it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
You're faking it because if the reaction is the only thing you're saying for, you don't believe in it, right? But I knew I was ready, or I know I was ready because, or I know a joke is ready because you cannot laugh at all, and I'll be like, all right, motherfucker, just wait. You gonna slow play me on this shit? Just sit right there, you stupid motherfucker. And then eventually, okay, now they're coming in. But I'm not flapping because it's ready. The bit is ready, or I'm connected to the bit. You know what I'm saying?
It's, you're free, man. You're a free guy. And a lot of people don't know that they're free. You've gone beyond borders. You don't care about the rules, you know.
Fuck them.
There's no rules. God, you're looking at somebody. I don't give a fuck about the rules. Because we're just going, like, when I got into comedy, I didn't want to be Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
And I hope he's recovering. My church podcast goes out there.
For sure.
I had surgery and whatnot. I didn't want to be Kevin Hart or Dave Chappelle. I just wanted to survive.
Yeah.
I didn't want to sell drugs. I didn't want to go back to prison.
Right.
But I fell in love with something. I studied something. And then I started looking at it from the... I saw how Jay Davies years ago would pack out rooms.
Mm.
And I'm like, what the fuck is Jay doing? Mm. I'm not doing right, you know. And it wasn't just Jay. There was a couple handful of comics that were packing out local rooms. Well, they had the balls to go out and pass out flyers and go out and do social media, you know. And then finally one day I'm like, I better start fucking around with this computer. And it changed my world, you know. But again, I watched the computer. I watched Twitter. I didn't see you on Twitter today, you know. There's people who just social network to death.
Yeah.
You and I do it very calculated.
Of course.
You're very calculated.
Yeah.
And I really, that's a big part of being a comic today.
Yeah.
You know, when I came here, I watched how comics would go out half the year. They want a TV show for a little while. They were in town working out.
Yeah.
You toured a special. I get into it. All of a sudden now I'm starting to sell tickets. And it's not like that. These agents just put you on a fucking skateboard.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 week you're in Dayton and 2 weeks later you're in Cleveland. And you're like, so they're giving you the recipe for failure.
Mm.
It's until you grab the bull by the horns and go, I'm doing it like Sinatra. A la Sinatra, my fucking way. Yeah. I don't give a fuck what
Let's
you
go.
Got. I don't see, you know what I'm saying?
Like,
I do this
Let's
my way.
Go.
I don't care about, you know, right now I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, I was disappointed for 2 minutes that I didn't hear back from Netflix.
Yeah.
Like, that's how disappointed I was.
Yeah.
Great company. They gave me a great opportunity. I don't know how to. A friend of mine had an expression growing up, and he used to always say, sometimes it's better to want than to have. When I got the call for the Degenerate special, I just agreed to it. I didn't think it out.
Right.
And it really pissed me off that I would be so careless at the age of 55.
Right.
I've been careless all my life, and I thought out every fucking move, you know. When I heard that it was being shot in a pool room, you know, there was just so many things that weren't who I am.
Right.
But I didn't give a fuck.
Right.
I had my mouth open like one of those Michael Jackson accusers. I was going to Australia and I was staying next to him. You know, that's why I sympathize with those Michael Jackson accusers because. Because
he wanted it.
1 minute you wanted
it. You're excited.
You'll suck a dick on the way.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
That's why Harvey Weinstein in my world, he might go to rape, he might go to jail if you. If he raped somebody, I want Harvey Weinstein to go to jail.
Yeah.
But unless you lived in L.A., you won't send Harvey Weinstein to go to jail.
Yeah.
Because people will. There's a woman out there that's 26 that's gorgeous, and she will get on her hands and knees and suck a 60-year-old cock that tastes like death. Tastes like death. I mean, you know, I mean, I smell my dick sometimes, and it smells just fucking god awful at 56. I can't imagine what woman would, you know, suck a dick to get put in a movie. It will be done out here.
Oh, an Oscar winning
movie. It's a shortcut.
Yeah.
It's a shortcut. People love shortcuts.
And I don't even blame them.
No, you cannot blame them.
Because they don't care about the art. They just want to be famous. So you're just going to do whatever makes you famous.
And what happened to me was when they called and said, yeah, Netflix, everybody's like, Netflix, you're going to be so lucky.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I got there that I said, I didn't think this out right.
Yeah.
I didn't think this out right. And then I went on stage and had a bag of dicks.
Yeah.
And I was even more pissed off at Andrew.
Because it's like, if I'm going to eat one, it's going to be on my terms. Yeah.
And there was people that caught it that said, if you watched your Uncle Joey walking off, you could see he was mad. Oh, I was livid.
Yeah.
I was livid. I had my friends and my family there, so I really couldn't throw chairs and act like a fucking gorilla.
Yeah.
Like I would have at 23. I went back to my room that night. I didn't fucking sleep.
Yeah.
And it's like, I knew all the mistakes I had made. I had made a mistake by taking it. Six-week notice.
Yeah, you got to get a set ready, man.
And this guy tells me, because I love your comedy, except when you're working on something.
Yeah.
And it's the truth. Don't shoot me when I know I'm getting shot. I don't want to put on a matching shirt. I don't want to fucking dye my hair. No. I don't want to put on makeup. That's not a special.
Yeah.
A special is when I don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Well, that's when you get something special.
That's what's special.
I film every show on the road for that reason, because I don't know what's going to happen at each show. So we film every show. We'll film 5 shows, 6 shows, 7 shows, 8 shows on a weekend, hoping that we get 1 2-minute clip. Think about how crazy that is. But we do it because that 1 2-minute clip or 5-minute clip is electric. I mean, there was a moment where there was some guy in the audience who had clearly murdered someone, and I was roasting him, not knowing that he murdered someone, and then it kind of comes out that he murdered, and I can't back off now. You know what I mean? Because then I'm pussy, so I got to, you know, keep going. We got to find it. And it's like, that can never be recreated. So we got to film every show to get that clip. Everyone. And that's, I think, where you end up getting the magic. I think when you're just trying to crunch numbers and trying to bring all these big fucking cranes, the production value, and rent to these theaters. Now, if there's one thing that I maybe helped out with comedy is like ushered in the expectations of the viewer. The viewer is fine with a comedy club now. That's where all of us put our clips. And I think that's where, you know, I maybe put out there in the world that that's where comedy should be seen. So now that it's okay to do in a comedy club, not a fucking Carnegie Hall.
I can't stand that shit.
Just put the fucking cameras up. Let them go. Don't tell anybody.
Didn't they do one of the greatest specials at Dangerfields? Didn't they do one of the greatest specials at Dangerfields?
What? Many. Several at Dangerfields.
Several. And it's like,
and that club sucks
today,
bro.
There's nobody in there.
Holy shit!
Nobody's in there.
It's too comfortable. They're like sagged back in the seats.
But they're such nice people. Where do you work?
You
want to
know
what
Weinstein's dick smells like?
Go to Dangerfields. I love it.
Take a whiff of that couch.
Every time I go to New York,
you go,
don't you? Ugh.
It's sad, man.
Out of respect, I have to go.
It's a different cultural. It's a different time.
Where do you work out?
I work out at New York Comedy Club and the Comedy Cellar. Those are the two main places that I'll go to. And New York Comedy Club has 2 clubs now, and they're just fucking killing it, man. They're doing so good. Obviously, the Cellar. Yeah, 4th Street, right?
I did 4th
Street. And then there's my favorite is the one on 24th, and it's a little black box room. I mean, seats tops 100 people, but like, for me, it's you can connect to every single person in the room. You're in the back corner. If somebody picks up their cell phone to like look, text message someone in the back corner, I can snap and hey, like everybody's locked in. And that's what I love most, especially if I'm working out, because I don't know where the beats are yet. So I can't have you guys getting distracted and everything like that. We're going to go through this together. And I just fucking love working out in that
room. Are you doing the road a lot these days?
Yeah, man. It's been good.
Every week.
I was doing almost every week for a while. And then October, I'll probably take a chill. I'll go Moscow, then we got Australia, and then we come back and, you know, do these theaters. And the theaters are awesome. Don't get me wrong. It's like an amazing like honor to be able to do the theaters, you know, but there is part of it that gets lost in these big theaters.
I think so too.
Right? It's like,
I like doing it. Listen, I got a kid.
Dude, I get older. It. You want to come back.
I don't have what I had 20 years ago. I don't have 4 weekends.
I know. I get it.
I wish I could go out for 16 weekends straight and come up with a new hour.
I get it.
Every fucking 32 weeks, you got two hours.
I don't blame you.
that is a dream of mine. Just I still remember going, I got no time.
Yeah.
And you go on the road for 8 weeks, come back with 30 minutes.
Bro.
That's it.
And it's like you said, the journey. Like, I remember when I released Views from Assist, the last special, right? We staggered the release. So I released one piece every week for like 6 weeks. I had maybe 15 minutes of material that wasn't in the special. So it was, but I had shows booked. So it was like, I need to fill 30 fucking minutes. And that's where the crowd work special comes from, is I was forced to go to sold out shows on the road and like, you better be funny. Like, we've been waiting for a while for you to come to Orlando. And it was like, okay, I got to make this a fucking event. And, you know, what do they say? It's like, what is it? Adversity introduces a man to himself, you know? So it's like, put in that situation, it was like, okay, I got to come up with an hour. I got to figure this fucking thing out. And yeah, we did it, man.
See, I don't want to do that. I don't want somebody to call me and say, okay, you're going to shoot a special February 18th.
Yeah.
That ruined
me. I chose to release it, though.
That's my choice. That's what
right?
I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to just put a camera out, tape it, and go, you know
what? We're going to talk. I have ideas for you, man.
This is what'll fucking work right now.
Yeah.
And you know what, man? I tell you what. I don't mind putting a special on YouTube. I always said it. Put a special on YouTube. You get 2 million hits. Maybe YouTube will do the next special with you.
And even if they don't, like, you could get an advertiser for this podcast to sponsor it. That's what I'm trying to, like, open people's mind to. It's like, if I got, you know, I think we're over 500,000 views already in less than a week for the crowd work special. You know what I mean? Like, that hits a million. Like, I could talk to advertisers. It's like, you pay X amount of dollars to have, you know, Jimmy Fallon's audience, which is smaller than a million, watch his show for one advertisement. It's like, now this, you could pay my devout fans that we know that there are certain things that they like. You could target them with something. Put the money up. What do you want for a million people that fuck with me heavy to see your brand? What does that mean? I mean, because once we start doing that, once we start going direct to the advertiser, shit, it's over. It's like, we don't need anybody. We literally need nobody. We need HBO or Netflix, et cetera, because they're the ones that have the money. But once we get the money direct and nobody's chopping it, why would you go anywhere else? Why would you go anywhere else? Does it make any sense?
No.
I mean, that was part of the reason why I dropped the same day as Chappelle. Like, I released it the same day as Chappelle because I was like, that's a $20 million special. And I wanted to put out a special that was $0 million. And I wanted you to watch them back to back. And I wanted you to tell me, I want you to truly watch them back to back and then just be like, "Wit, did I laugh $20 million more?"
That's brilliant shit.
I wanted.
Did you sell coke in high school?
I tried to sell weed when I was in Spain, man, but I wasn't good at it.
Did you deliver papers in grammar school or something?
No, but my parents just worked their fucking asses off, man.
Where did you get your hustle from?
My folks. My dad just worked relentlessly.
But listen, there's people. Yeah. Look,
relentlessly, dude.
The beauty about comedy is.
Yeah.
Like, me and Lee were talking last night, and he's like, "I went out the guy." I go, "You do comedy every night."
Yeah.
The first 8 years, you do comedy every night.
Yeah.
Then. I think I did comedy every night for the first 13 years. So I got the longest yard, I did comedy every night.
Yeah.
I didn't know what else you did.
Yeah. Like,
you just do comedy.
Well, yeah.
And then you start doing different things. And it basically takes you about 10 to 12 years to figure out how to work smart.
Hmm.
We spin our wheels. We really do.
Yeah.
You know, when I call you and go, "Hey, what are you doing? Listen, I got a gig up in Yonkers that pays $22.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a gig at the Fifth Street Comedy,
New York Comedy Club.
And by the time you go to Yonkers, you're like, "What the fuck did I commit myself to? I'll never do this again."
Yeah,
you'll do it, but you'll never do it again.
Sure.
So, what I tell people is that you learn how to work smart.
Yeah,
I'm still working 60 hours a week. Instead of 70,
mm-hmm.
but it's 60 hours that I'm getting. Effective. 60 hours out. Yeah. It's not spinning your wheels. The first 10 years of comedy, no matter what I tell you, the first 8 years of comedy
means nothing.
You're spinning your wheels.
There's I think a lot of people often get confused with like doing a set and like as if that's work. You know, because a lot of people be like, I went up tonight, I did some work. Or like, I tried to forward my career. It's like, did you do the same jokes you know work? Because in my mind, I think you're just working your ego, which is necessary. We all need like a really good show every once in a while to like make sure that we feel like we're supposed to do it. But like, there's a lot of other work that could happen. You know, it's like, did you try out that new bit? Did you try that the new tag? Like, I would be so upset at myself if I didn't prepare something for the set that I did. Like, if I just did the set that kills and didn't add a tag or like think about a new joke or forgot to do, I was like, I just fucking wasted that set. Because let's be honest, and my boy Chrissy D pointed this out to me, the waitresses are making more money than us at the club. Like, when we're doing spots in the city, whether it's at the store, the improv, the cellar, New York Comedy Club, the waitstaff's making more money than us. So if you're not working on your act, you're losing money. My Uber costs more there and back than I'm going to make at the club. So I got to do something outside of just work on the bits I know work to get for it to be worth my money, right? Like, I'm at a point in my career where, like, just getting up at a club doesn't validate me. Like, I'm selling out theaters, right? So it's like, this is for me to work on bits. That there, if I'm not working on shit and I'm not trying to get better at jokes, and even if it's tweaking the order of one little thing, adding tag, if I don't add something when I go up in the city, I wasted that fucking set. And I took that set away from a young comic that should be doing it. Because what the fuck should I be doing? I should be taking some young comics time so I can stroke my ego?
That's the same way. It's so funny how I just go out Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays now. And I try to do two sets in the Comedy Store. I don't have time to drive all around the city. I don't. I really don't.
You know what works.
So I wanted to metal sharpens metal.
There we go.
After the Netflix debacle, metal sharpens metal. I'm going to go to the store, but I'm going to work it differently. I'm going to do a different set in the original room, different set in the main room, both done. Nights. Done. I'm gonna, if I go in the main room and that joke didn't work, I'm going to tweak it before I go in the original room or vice versa. I'm working, you know, once a month. I don't want to go on the road every month.
Mm-hmm.
I love looking at my daughter. I've seen a lot of people who have spun their lives on the road. The road could be a road to something or a road to nowhere. Mm-hmm. I want it to be to gain momentum, little spots. You don't need to go out January fucking 11th. They haven't gotten their fucking credit card this month. You know what I'm saying? There's weeks that you're just fighting against the wind.
Yeah,
you know, this weekend, if you're a comic and you're on Labor Day, I applaud you if you took the week, but ain't nobody going to come, especially on the East Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all grilling outside, waiting for Hurricane Donnie Osmond, whatever it's fucking name. You know, there's certain weeks that we don't have the time, you know. There's no reason for me to work Father's Day, Mother's Day, Easter. I got a family.
If you don't have a life, you don't have comedy.
You don't have comedy. Yes.
Yeah.
So,
like, you could tell the motherfuckers that don't have a life because the bitch got no soul. It's like, I don't know. Like, I imagine even having a daughter, that changes your comedy. It's like you got more soul. Your soul expanded.
Listen, the first 10 years of comedy, I had nothing. I had no responsibility.
And the comedy reflects it, right?
I had a pager. I had a fucking car that had no bumper, no insurance, no brakes.
Yeah.
But the love of comedy overrode everything.
Sure,
it usually does. It overrides everything, you know?
But the comedy itself needs life, man. Like, even like getting in a relationship, getting out of a relationship, like, you could tell when like a comic has just experienced something because there's something for them to fucking chew on. And then you could tell the guys who, like, you know, they just don't have anything. So they can write really clever jokes, but there's nothing behind it. There's no passion. Like, I would rather hear you rant about a horrible Uber ride than hear some guy's clever Uber joke. And he can have more punchlines in his joke, but I know you felt that way about the Uber ride. I know you really felt these fucking things about the guy in the front seat and he didn't move the passenger seat back so you couldn't fit, like, whatever the fuck that is.
And he was talking on the phone in Arabic and I kept thinking he was talking to me. You ever go on those Ubers? And you're like, what? And they're like, I'm talking about that. And they're like, who the fuck are you talking to?
You haven't
shut the fuck up since the airport. Who the fuck are you talking? Who the fuck? An hour you're on the phone. Who wants to talk to somebody when they're on the phone for an hour? It's like black people. You ever see black people? They're going to get pizza and they're on the phone with somebody.
Still on a Bluetooth.
That, is, I'm the type of motherfucker that get your pizza. Nah. Dog, let me get two slices, pepperoni. Yeah, I told that bitch. Yeah, let me get a great, you know, whatever the fuck they're eating. Then they have a conversation and that person's still on the fucking phone. I'm like, hey, conduct your business. I got to get off the phone. I ain't got time to listen to every fucking word you're saying. Get the fuck off the phone.
You see what I'm saying? How much more enjoyable is it? It's like, that's just me. Maybe that's the type of comedy that I tend to be a fan of. But like, when I know somebody's passionate about it and it's real, that's better than any like little clever joke. And I think that's the people who tend to like have like cult-like fan bases. It's the motherfuckers where like you actually feel them. You actually, like when they talk about something, you know they mean it. That's their POV. And it's like, okay, I can latch on to this guy. And that doesn't have to be always an angry person. Theo's got it. There's something about Theo that you latch on to him. He's vulnerable, right? And then there's guys who are passionate. Like fucking Kinison had it. It's just a thing that when it's authentic and there, people gravitate. And when it's not, you know, you better have a billion-dollar network behind you, dog. You better have because you're going to need it because the people ain't going to back you. It's like running for president, man.
I was telling somebody the other day, in the time I've been here, I could count 8 comics who they've tried very hard to make a star. And it's never worked.
Oh, it doesn't work.
They've stood behind them in every opportunity. I could sit here and tell you 7 names. I don't want to embarrass nobody. Mm-hmm. And they're still around and they're successful. They're not Dave Chappelle successful.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody pushed Dave Chappelle down our throats.
You can't make
Dave
a star.
Dave Chappelle.
Stars exist.
We fell in love with Dave Chappelle after the Chappelle Show. And before the Chappelle Show, for a lot of people who don't know it, he was still around 20 years before that, busting his hump. He had got
the clubs.
Fucking developmental deals. I still remember working with him in 97. I still remember seeing him at the Boston Comedy Club in 94 with Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yeah.
93.
Yeah.
That's how... So if I started in 91 and 93, Chappelle was already huge. Like he was with Jay Moore that night and Nick DiPaolo. And I was like an open micer going,
prodigy.
Holy fuck.
A young prodigy.
You know, I mean, he studied Barnett. You know, Charlie Barnett was his main guy at the fucking park. And, you know, so I don't want people to think that
Greer Barnes, Tony Woods. You could see
Tony
the influence
Woods,
on those guys on Chappelle, man. Like, and he was such a student of the game that he was able to, like, you know, pick up these amazing, you know, tools and resources from some of the most brilliant comics. I mean, like, Greer and Tony are some of the best comics that have ever lived. Like, I mean, watching Tony Woods is an experience, man.
It really is.
Like, there are few people that can, you know, when you see that.
Where's Tony live?
Everywhere. This motherfucker could be performing in, like, the living room of some prince in Saudi Arabia. He could be in India. He could be in the Bahamas. Anywhere. He's everywhere and nowhere at the same fucking time. He's Batman, dude. Tony Woods is motherfucking Batman. And we don't know where he is, but he's going to pop up. And he'll deliver a set. When you watch Chappelle in the last special or even the Bird Revelation, like, tell these long, beautiful stories and create such a calm and ease where you're just like, all right, I'll listen. Even if I'm not laughing, I'm listening. I'm curious. Like, for me, that's the school of Tony. Like, Tony is, I can listen to Tony talk for 2 hours straight, just tell stories for 2 hours straight, comfortably. I'm a comic. Eventually, I'm like, I'm out of here. It is the most fun that you'll just, it's just calm. There's certain guys that are going to like pound you to death with punchlines, you know, but he's the type of guy that just creates this amazing calm and then rewards the calm with laughs and the fucking, yeah, dude, it's great, man. It's fucking
I love
great.
Those guys that say, well, you need 3 punchlines every 6 minutes. So no, just be funny.
You're not a scientist,
be yourself.
Bro.
Andrew, it's a real pleasure to get you in here.
Dude, thank you, man.
What
I
you're doing
it.
Is world class. I hope that a lot of comics are watching you and cheering for you.
I hope so too, man.
Because you're one of the heirs of Lenny Bruce. Okay?
God bless
you. I consider myself one of the heirs of Lenny Bruce. We're very lucky. We all the shit you were talking about. I would love to do a special and see a chandelier fall and the guy do 10 minutes on the chandelier falling. You know, that's what I live for.
Yeah.
But the networks, you know, oh, it's got to be polished.
Contrived.
You know, and I've seen people nitpick specials over years, and it's for no reason. The bottom line is it funny or not?
Is it real, man?
Well, the lighting wasn't.
Gives a fuck.
Shut the fuck up.
It doesn't matter, dude.
You prove that all wrong. You've forgiven all those motherfuckers that said, well, you need to spend $250,000 and get a crane and 10 midgets to dance and a long opening. I even loved your opening. You're talking to some black guy. He's selling you a nickel bag. You get up and you go do your thing. Nobody, and you went right out there, attacked the fucking Korean.
Yeah.
And I'm watching all this. And
payback.
I'm like, this guy doesn't give a fuck. That's why he's doing what he's doing. And the audience he has is reading this.
Yeah.
That he's going against whatever Comedy Central thinks, whatever Netflix thinks, whatever HBO thought of comedy, whatever True TV thinks. I don't know what the fuck they're thinking. You know, there's like eight of Viceland, shoot yourselves.
Yeah.
There's like eight networks that are just, there's like eight networks that you would say, you think about it.
Yeah.
You really think about how many networks in your heart you would really want to go on.
It's tough, man.
In your heart that you would go, I really want to go over there. But if you're going to put me after, who the fuck wants to go on Comedy Central?
Hey, there's nothing there. You're
there's nothing
there.
There's it's nothing dead. There.
They're going out of business.
And they go deeper and deeper into the hole with every show. Bro. Like, really? That's your answer. Yeah. Oh, shit. There's eight guys doing tremendous podcasts. And this is the fucking moron you picked for later. It's fucking mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. Fucking Crab Feast is doing better than most of your fucking shows. What's his name?
Ryan Sickler. Shout out to Ryan, man.
Sickler's a fucking savage.
Yeah, yeah.
Put him on a fucking show at 11 o'clock and let's have three fucking normal guests.
Yeah.
But the people that they keep putting on and shoving down your fucking throat and you're supposed to like them, and one day you're like, what do I like this fucking person for? They're doing everything for me to like them. I like people that do things for me not to like them, like you. You're not supposed
because I don't care if you like me or not.
He's not on Comedy Central. Okay. He's better. He's on his own fucking there time, his own universe. Where can people find you, brother? Give me all the
YouTube. YouTube.com/TheAndrewSchultz. You can check the specials out there. We put up stand-up every single week and a few different shows. We got this travel show on there dropping in where I do stand-up in each city that we go on tour in. And another show called Inside Jokes is pretty cool where like we few comics come together and we all bring a joke of ours that's like too divisive, pisses off the crowd, and then we all kind of like work it out, and then you see us try it on stage later. So I'm just trying to treat it like, you know, the comedy that I want to see in the world. I'm just trying to put on my comedy channel. And
you have a website?
Yeah, theandrewschultz.com, and you could get all like tickets for shows and that kind of stuff there. And I got a couple podcasts, Brilliant Idiots with Charlemagne the God and Flagrant 2 with Akash Singh and Real Life Kaz, and shouts to Alex Media and Mark Gagnon, my guys who are doing all this great work. So
you're doing God's work by letting people know.
Thank you, man.
That they could do it.
Go out there.
I started this podcast we all put our pants on one leg at a time. But I really started this podcast to let you know that the rules were meant to be broken.
Facts.
There's no rules.
Facts.
Just because I was a felon, I was supposed to give up.
Uh huh.
I was supposed to give up, file for disability, get a check, and tell people the rest of my life, I can't get a job
because
I'm a felon. There's a felony. Nobody would hire you. If you go into it looking at it like that,
that's what you'll find.
That's what you'll find.
Yeah.
We got no rules, bitch. The only rules are what your fucking rules
there
are.
We
that's
go.
What matters. Do not forget, I'm at the Majestic Theater, 13th in Dallas. A few tickets are left. San Antonio's gone. I'm also doing a workshop at the Comedy Store, the 18th or the 17th in the Belly Room. I'm going to start doing a one-man show once a month at the third Wednesday of the month. Check comedystore.com for details. And September 27th at the motherfucking Chicago Theater. Real quick, I want to give a shout out to the sponsors. The Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by my bookie. Football season is here. Thursday, you cocksuckers. You like winning money or you want to sit on your couch broke looking for quarters in between? You like betting sports? Well, I'll tell you where you can put your money down. MyBookie.com. If you're trying to bet on the NFL, baseball, MMA, whatever, MyBookie's got it. Don't forget, you got fucking Khabib against Poirier this weekend. Now, MyBookie, they got better incentives and more lines than any other sports book, period. This year, they're running a super contest. You ready? grab a pen. It's $100 to enter. You pick five teams a week against the spread, and you rack up the points. First place is guaranteed $100,000. Enough with your bullshit that you went 7 out of 7 last week. Enough. Put your money where your fucking mouth is. They just revamped their site, and it's looking fucking tremendous. So go take a look if you haven't already. Now, do me a favor. What we're going to do over at MyBookie, we're going to double your first deposit today, right now. Use promo code CHURCH to get 100% bonus on your initial deposit of up to $1,000. Who's better than you? Nobody, cocksucker. Visit mybookie.ag today. That's MyBookie. Grab a pen. MyBookie.ag. And don't forget to use the promo code CHURCH, CHURCH, when creating your account to claim your bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. And don't forget to check my Instagram on Thursday. I'll be dropping a little video with picks and fucking around and making bets. You'll be saying Uncle Joey's my bookie from now on. Follow me on at Matt Flavors World. Also, the church is brought to you by one of my favorites. It's between Cuban Coffee, Aleve, and CBD Lion. That's what's keeping me together. That's the glue, all right? The other day I whacked off, I smelt my hand. It smelled like CBD fluid. That's how much CBD is in my body. But if it's in my body, it's because of CBDLion.com. Oh, yeah. I come in you now with the CBD dick. You're done. You're going to have kids. You're going to have kids with four fucking eyes. That's how strong my sperm is. Picking a reliable CBD company is like pulling fucking teeth. No more. Because your Uncle Joey got you with CBD Lion. They make their CBD products from start to finish. CBD Lion has you covered. Now, listen, if you want to smoke shatter, if you want to do the vape, if you want to do the cartridges, they got you. Uncle Joey, I go with the gummy bears, but my favorite is the tincture. I put 5,000 milligrams under my tongue, and I sleep like a fucking baby. I don't have to get up to pee. Their products are clean, Bobby, and they're not like the fucking fakes that you see at the jewelry, at the fucking jewelry stores and the 7-Eleven. A fucking, some fuck guy from ISIS trying to sell you CBD fucking juice. Get the fuck out of here. You got Uncle Joey, and I'm telling you right now, go to CBDLion.com and check out their third-party lab results yourself. They're not fucking around. So what I want you to do is this. Go to CBDLion, see some tinctures, some chatters, some gummies, press in church on the checkout, I'm going to give you 20% off. 20% off. And you're going to live, you're going to be healthy. CBD oil is fucking tremendous. And when it comes to it, CBD Lion does it the best. Again, CBDLion.com and MyBookie.ag. I want to thank Andrew Schultz. I want to thank the Christ Killer. But most importantly, I want to thank you motherfuckers for always having our back. We'll see you cocksuckers Monday morning, ready to go, tip-top Magoo. Kick this fucking mule, Lee. Ha ha ha!